I want to welcome you to our breakfast, although it's getting a little late for breakfast, so we'll call it a brunch. And more importantly, to the briefing that we have today on the new language of food and modern agriculture. This perspective on food culture from farm to fork is sponsored by the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. I'm Chris Galen, and in my day job, I'm Senior Vice President of Communications at the National Milk Producers Federation in Arlington, Virginia. In my other job, I also serve on the Board of Directors of USFRA. Now, today is the last day of winter, and actually it's supposed to be spring-like a little later, probably once we leave the room here. It's also Ag Day, when we traditionally celebrate the contributions that America's farmers and ranchers make to our society. We wanted to use this opportunity of Ag Day to share some new research on how we talk about agriculture and how farmers and ranchers are listening. And when I say we, talking and listening about agriculture, I mean all of America, our entire culture, not just those involved in food production. In addition to talking, because this is the 21st century, we're going to be tweeting. I think Katie's doing that right now, since that's also how America communicates these days. So if you are listening or want to engage while you're sitting here in the room and you have a smartphone, the hashtag for this event is FoodD, F-O-O-D, and another D. You can also find us online at www.fooddialogues.com. Now, this location, the Sewell Belmont House and Museum, is the historic home of the National Women's Party, so it's fitting to be in a location like this when we have two women here today, well, you and then Erica is waiting in the wings, who are going to be talking about their roles in food and food production and farming. Now, farming is one of those occupations, and perhaps those involved in politics are another example of a different occupation where we make a lot of assumptions about those engaged in it. The assumptions about age, older, and gender, mostly male. But in the case of farming, at least, we have plenty of women who are daughters, mothers, and wives, young people going to school and coming back to the farm, even those who don't necessarily have a family history of farming, getting involved in farming and ranching for the first time. The methods we use to grow and raise our food every day happen to be evolving as technologies and societal mores are changing. So it makes sense that how we talk about food and farming also need to change. That's what the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance is trying to do through our food dialogues process. We're a coalition of nearly 80 farmer-led and rancher-led organizations and agricultural partners who represent virtually all aspects of American agriculture, who are collectively working to engage in a dialogue with consumers who have questions about where their food comes from and how it's produced. So that's really what we're here to do today. It's important for us to show the faces of those involved in production agriculture today. The USFRA conducted a search, a nationwide search, for a representative sample of people who we feel represent the best of agriculture today, and we selected four people, one of whom is here today, and I have the pleasure now to introduce Katie Pratt, who is a farm mom from Illinois and one of our faces of farming and ranching. Katie?
Well, thank you, everyone. And for those of you who are more, apt at tweeting, just bear with me with this whole tweeting business. I am very new to it, so this is like trial by fire for me today. So if you're following me, give me a little bit of break. Just a little bit. So I am Katie Pratt, and I'm so happy to be here, and thank you all for coming as well today. My husband and I are seventh-generation farmers in North Central Illinois. That is corn country, and so that is what we grow, corn, soybeans, and seed corn, and a couple farm kids. We farm with Andy's family, and we support three generations with our farming adventures, three families with our farming adventures. I grew up not far from where we farm right now and lived the typical farm kid life. Our chore list was never ending. We baled hay and moved cattle and weaned pigs and picked peas, we walked beans and baled hay, we fixed fence and mowed the yard and picked apples, and did I mention that we baled hay? Yeah. It was the typical life of a farm kid, but my sister, brother, and I now recall fondly, and with appreciation, the life that we lived, the lessons that we learned, and now the love that we share for the land and the animals and the farm. It is because of that upbringing and because of my involvement in 4-H and FFA, I have to give credit where credit is due, is why I'm involved with the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. I've participated in different trainings, I've sat on different panels, and now serve as just one of the faces of farming and ranching. And I'm doing this because I believe in the future of agriculture. And the future of our farm should be sitting in a kindergarten and second grade classroom right now back in Amboy, Illinois. Our son and daughter, they have a lot of time to decide if farming is going to be their career choice. But in order to secure that opportunity for them tomorrow, I have to talk about it today. We're seeing more sons and daughters returning to the farm and bringing with them varied college degrees, new ideas, and innovations. People are entering the fields as first-time farmers and bringing with them an unbridled enthusiasm for what we know to be a very challenging career. Just this past week at the South by Southwest Film Festival, an award-winning filmmaker announced that he will be producing a new feature-length documentary about the next generation of farmers and ranchers, all of them in their 20s and all returning to run the family businesses. The film is not expected to be out until next year, but it is expected to tell the real stories of American agriculture. And telling the real stories of American agriculture is exactly what farmers and ranchers are doing through social media, in churchyards, at football games, and over family dinners. Telling our farm story has really been a family tradition for us starting back in the 1970s when my husband's grandfather welcomed kids from Chicago area schools out to his dairy farm. And when my dad brought a group of Japanese farmers over to look at our new farrowing house. They oohed and aahed over that building. I remember that very well. And now as a farmer's wife, I continue to serve as the tour guide. That's my title on the farm. We've hosted teachers groups. We've hosted students from urban and suburban schools, industry representatives, and quite often anymore, a curious passerby. What I have discovered is that one-on-one, we share a connection, mostly over food, over our need and want to provide a healthy diet for our families, and also to have confidence in a food system that is safe and meets our high expectations, our values of caring for the land and our resources and leaving our small space better than when we arrived. The U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance is giving farmers and ranchers the tools to make this connection. We all know farmers and ranchers notoriously are not the type to stand up and talk about what they're doing. As my husband reminds me quite often, I farm, you talk. He's very comfortable with that setup. But regardless, if you are comfortable farming or more comfortable talking, I believe it is important for farmers and ranchers to take an active role in telling your personal stories of how you raise food, fuel, and fiber on your farm. It's a role that we can all play. All shapes and commodities, all sizes, organic or conventional, multi-generational or just beginning. We all have a hand in the food chain, and therefore, we all have a say. Erica Poffelreiter is here today as well. She works at Ketchum, which is a partnering organization with the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. But she's also another Midwest farmer who tells a real story about American agriculture. And she's going to present to us today a new perspective on food culture that is led by farmers and ranchers, how the language we use can help restore relevance for agriculture in America by building trust and transparency about how our food is grown and raised. Erica?
Thank you, Katie. I'm a little bit of a pacer. Can we all hear me? Whoop. I'm a little bit of a pacer, so hopefully if we get any feedback, I will stand still, and I'll stand behind a podium, but that's just not really my nature. Like she said, I'm Erica Bowser Poffelreiter. I come to you from Northeast Kansas, where I have a very similar story to Katie, actually. I grew up on a diversified crop and livestock operation. Spent my summers throwing hay. My dad didn't let me slip by. I couldn't make excuses. Well, I got a softball game tonight. I can't go out and throw hay. That didn't work. He still made me go out and throw hay every day in the summer. Had a cow-calf operation until I was about a freshman in high school. We were actually a farrow to finish hog operation. So I have a pretty diverse upbringing. And then, of course, like most mothers tell their daughters, don't marry a farmer. And I went to college and stumbled upon one that I just couldn't get rid of. So now I'm married to a farmer, and we farm along the Kansas River bottom. We farm corn and soybeans, and we also run a beef stocker cattle operation. And we also raise three children who diligently are very involved in the farm for being only 3 and 5, and they want to go feed cattle about every day. As one of my twins actually says, when she feeds with us in the morning, she always says, those are the special ingredients. That's what she calls it in the feed wagon. So good group of kids. So we'll go ahead and get started here in a second. They're working on getting my presentation up, and I'm probably standing right in front of it. And we'll go ahead and get started and talk a little bit about the new language of food. I travel the country actually on behalf of USFRA, talking to farmers and ranchers about how to have conversations with consumers, which I am not going to lie, until probably a year ago, I probably wouldn't have found as great of importance in this as I do today. You know, before I was probably like many farmers and ranchers. I did my job. I did it well. I loved farming. I loved ranching. I felt like I was giving to the greater good. You know, working my best every day to produce a healthy and safe food supply. But now that I've been in this role, and now that I've been talking to farmers or ranchers, and now that I see the misconceptions that people have about how food is grown and raised, I can tell you that I think this job is extremely important, and it's extremely important to have conversations with consumers. So I think one of the things that we can probably all agree on is that folks today are a little bit disconnected from agriculture. I think that for far too long we have not, so you guys can see me here. I think that we can probably all agree that we're just a little bit removed from the farm at this point. And when we look at folks, either in the political arena, when we look at consumers, they don't really have a thorough understanding of what exactly it is that farmers and ranchers do each and every day. Only half of Americans pay attention to how their food is grown and raised. More than 1 in 4 Americans have questions, though, about how their food was grown and raised, and that's an issue. That's an issue because farmers and ranchers need to provide that transparency. They need to answer those questions. They need to provide that information. But the positive thing is people are interested in food. America is talking about food more than ever before. Whether that's the locavore movement, whether that's the food bans, there's always an opportunity to talk about food. People are interested. They're passionate about it. They feed their families. They feed themselves each and every day. But they don't always get it right. And that's where farmers and ranchers come into play about sharing their stories. Interestingly enough, farmers and ranchers have made vast improvements over the years. When I think back to my childhood on the farm, and I think about the things that we did and the intense labor that we had to go through every day, just to put seed in the ground, just to harvest, there were all kinds of things we had to do that have now changed. My son gets in a tractor and can't figure out why we don't have to touch the steering wheel anymore. Our tractors drive themselves, thanks to GPS. Thanks to biotechnology, vast improvements have been made as far as crop protection. But you know what? Only 1/3 of Americans believe that we have reduced our use of pesticides. Only 8 crops are genetically modified, but I bet if I held up a cucumber today, fine. And that's, nor is that a way to tell by visually looking at something whether that product was genetically modified or not. You know, and to make the last point on this slide, and then we'll just keep picking up where we were going, 95% of farms are family-owned and operated. But unfortunately, consumers today actually believe that we're still beholden to big processors and agribusinesses, that they mandate what we do on our farms, when in reality is we make all of our own choices, and 95% of those farms really are family-owned and run and operated. So as I was mentioning, sometimes the story is not always told correctly. And guess what? It's not going to be an easy thing to change minds. It's not going to be easy to enlighten folks and tell the story of farming and ranching. There's been a lot of misconceptions out there. We have a lot of folks who are telling the wrong story, who are providing misinformation, who use scare tactics to tell consumers how exactly food is grown and raised. And these are huge challenges and hurdles that we have to overcome. So as we walk along here, we're going to go through some of our research. We're going to watch some videos. We're going to look at some of our dial testing videos. And, you know, by any means, if y'all have any questions as I walk through this, please feel free to interrupt me. Sometimes I get to plug in along and forget certain details, so please feel free to ask questions as we run along. But we're going to walk through some research, and we're going to talk about some ways to have conversations with consumers about farming and ranching and what resonates and what doesn't. So when we look at our research, we can see that that consumers have very high-level concerns. Their concerns are about long-term health impacts, whether that's heart health, diabetes, obesity. They have very high-level concerns about their health. Anything that seems unnatural to them is a threat. And pretty much anything that we use in modern agriculture today is a threat to them, whether that's antibiotics, hormones, biotechnology, fertilizer. All these things raise concerns with consumers about how food was grown and raised. And unfortunately, in the ag industry, we've worked a really long time at relaying all of our scientific research and all of our messages and all of our data. And it's very great and solid information, but unfortunately, that is not something that resonates with our consumer audience. So looking at this chart, there's always some things here that surprise me. When we look at the media, they think that 38% of them aren't telling the true story or getting their facts straight. 33% of media don't get their facts straight. 38% of them believe that the government doesn't get their facts straight either. And then hold on to your britches, 49% of them think that agriculture is on the wrong track. 49%. I get up every morning, I never thought I was on the right track or on the wrong track for farming and ranching, but 49% of consumers say that we are on the wrong track. And unfortunately, we no longer have the benefit of the doubt, which is a sad thing. We'd love to have the benefit of the doubt back, but that's going to take work, that's going to take time, that's going to take sharing stories about farming and ranching, opening up, creating that transparency. And unfortunately, they challenge our facts, and everything that we talk about today is driven by emotion rather than logic. So we're going to talk a little bit today about where we are, where we need to go in the future. We're going to quit talking in messaging and data points, and rather we're going to talk in storytelling and narratives. And we're going to quit explaining to folks, and rather we're going to try to provide the ultimate experience about farming and ranching. So as we walk through this presentation here today, we're going to talk a little bit, like I said, about our research. We're going to look at these dial testings. We're going to show what messages resonate well with consumers, which ones don't, and then hopefully farmers and ranchers will take the opportunity to share their stories regarding what they do each and every day. So we partner with a group called Maslansky Lunson Partners, who go by, it's not what you say, it's what they hear, which is very, very true. So we worked with 1,200 folks in three different categories. That'd be the movable middle, influencers, and the food connectors. And these folks are people who have questions. They're more skeptical than the typical consumer. They're not completely for ag, they're not completely against ag, but they still have some questions. They still want to hear more about our industry. They are in a specific group that wants to learn about how food is grown and raised. So we took these 1,200 folks in four different cities and we went through a series of dial testing messages with them. We looked through fooddialogues.com. We worked with farmers and ranchers. We mined for their stories of improvement and what exactly they do on their farms and ranches. And we put this information in front of these groups and put that work to test and put that information to test to see how well it resonated. So from there, which I love this slide because I want to hide under a table every time I see it, I cannot tell you how many times I have said, save, affordable, abundant. I'm actually pretty sure that I won a farm contest on this messaging one time. And Katie laughs because she's participated in this same contest. But unlike me, she won. Didn't she win? She won. But at any rate, I always am kind of interested in this slide because in my mind, I want to say, why doesn't safe, affordable, abundant work? I mean, to me, this should work, but it doesn't. Because once again, we go back to those high-level health concerns. We say safe, and they say, I really don't know if I think that pesticides and hormones are safe for me in the long run. And we talk about affordable, and they say, really? But what expense to quality? And we say abundance, and they say, isn't that the issue? We're already a nation that has huge health issues. We already have obesity, diabetes, and look at those studies where it says we throw 40% of our food away. Abundance is not a problem. That's not an area of concern. So I always am pretty surprised by this slide because it makes me feel pretty guilty about all the messaging that I have probably said throughout my 30 years of life and what I've been telling consumers for so long. So we're going to walk through one of our dial testing videos here, and I'm going to give you a little bit of background. The red is the GOP, the blue is the Democratic line, and you're going to see these lines move according to what they're hearing. Now, for anybody who watched the dial testing videos or dial testing during the elections in November, you're very familiar with these. And what you'll see here is once they are walking through the messaging, our 1,200 folks in those four cities watched these videos, and they were able to move that dial according to exactly how they felt. Positive, negative, you know, it's a really good way to see that gut instinct reaction to what exactly they're hearing. Anything that sticks on that 50 mark line is a message that falls flat. Anything that goes below that is not a positive message, it's a negative message, and anything that goes above is a message that's resonating well. So we're going to go ahead and watch this. Is there any way I can...
Strengths of American agriculture is that, contrary to public belief, most of the food we eat is produced by individuals and families who happen to care that it's safe and good for you. 95% of the farmland in America is family-owned and run. And big doesn't mean factory farm. Most large farms are successful family-run businesses that have high environmental and safety standards. Farming is not a business for faceless corporations. It's our heritage. And many farms and ranches in America use the same land and the same knowledge that's been in our families for generations. So for us, working the land is more than just a job. It's where we've grown up and we'll grow old, as probably will some of our children.
So this is a message that I have also loved to relay a lot. I love to talk about my family farm. I love to talk about what we do each and every day and think, you know, the whole family dynamic is what should carry all the weight. But unfortunately, this video falls flat because it does not address those high-level concerns about long-term health impacts. So this is always fairly interesting, the fact that when we look at our research, people already like farmers and ranchers. 75% of them, love farmers and ranchers. They think we're great people, they're nice, they have positive feelings about us. But 42% of them are unfavorable to what exactly we do each and every day. That's a huge disconnect. Once again, that disconnect comes back to what exactly we do each and every day, the modern tools that seem unnatural to them. So we're going to kind of walk through a few examples here of things that we would say in farming and ranching and the differences in between what consumers would hear. So we may talk a little bit about how our methods are proven safe, and instead they hear, "We think your methods tamper with nature." We may say something like, "Hey, we keep our food affordable," and once again we're going to go back to, "At what expense to quality?" We may say most farms are family run, but they're going to say, "Beholden to big processors and at the bottom line." We may say something like, "We care about our land and our animals," and they're going to hear, "You'll take profitable shortcuts if and when you can." We may say, "We need to produce more to feed the world," and they're going to say, "No, really, you just want to produce more to sell to the world." We may say something like, "We need a secure domestic food supply," and the difference that they hear is, "You want subsidies and lax regulations." We may say something like, we have the safest food supply in the world thanks to the agricultural industry." And once again, we go back to, "I'm not sure if those antibiotics or those pesticides or those hormones are safe for me in the long run." So as you can see, those are completely different messages as to what we are saying and what exactly they are hearing. So when I said, "Where's the disconnect?" Here's the disconnect. They are concerned with about everything that we do. These numbers are huge. 55% of them are concerned about supplemental hormones. They're still concerned about pesticides, antibiotics, biotechnology, fertilizer. They're concerned with almost every modern tool that's available to conventional agriculture. And we're going to watch another video here. And one of the things that we do is I travel the country and I talk with farmers and ranchers about how to have conversations with consumers, urge them to tell their story about how they grow and raise food. And we walk through a four-step process to get that done. We tell them, you know, take the opportunity to engage. We tell them to acknowledge their concerns, share a story, and then hopefully you earn trust. Ease. We walk through what we call our ease training. And this video is going to show what happens when you acknowledge concerns. Now, as a farmer rancher, I can tell you that acknowledging concerns to me is like the hardest of the four steps. Consumers don't like to be told they're wrong. Farmers and ranchers don't like to be told they're wrong. Nobody likes to be wrong, right? So if you can take the opportunity to just acknowledge that we hear you, we understand you have concerns, and we're willing to address those, and this is how, You'll see how well this resonates.
Not everything farmers do is perfect. No profession or industry is, especially one as big, widespread, and diverse as ours. And consumers rightfully want to make sure we are treating animals well, maintaining food quality and safety, and doing our jobs in ways that don't harm the environment. So today, we want you to know we hear your concerns, and we are committed to responding. We need to do a better job of explaining what we do and why we do it. We need to acknowledge the areas where we've at times fallen down. We need to continue to take concrete steps to make sure consumers approve of the way we operate. And we know that no matter how good we are today, we can always be better.
So I think that's pretty amazing. He just took the opportunity to acknowledge concerns, and you can see how well that resonated. You know, that's, like I said, that's the hardest step, is to take the opportunity or take the time to say that, you know, really, we hear you, and we're willing to take the steps to provide you the information that you want and need about how food is grown and raised. I love that video. So when we take a look at our research, and once again, going back to those long-term health impacts, it still ranks the highest. No doubt, short-term health impacts also made the list, but obviously not nearly as high. You know, they aren't criticizing farmers and ranchers and what we do. Rather, they're questioning the things and the tools that we use each day. And I think that it's, you know, I think they can question us. I think it's a reasonable thing that they have questions. But we have not always been forthcoming or created the opportunities to explain what exactly we do. So we go, like I said, we go through these conversations with ease trainings. And here was a farmer that went through an ease training. And this is what he said. He said, after a long day in the field, it's easy to feel attacked, but all they really want to know is more about their food. That's fairly reasonable. I think if every farmer and rancher can hold that close to their hearts and take that quote and then run with it, I think that we will continue to see that dialogue move forward. So we're going to talk a little bit about some research that really resonates well. We're going to walk through a couple more videos here, and then we'll have an opportunity to ask some questions. So when we look at our research and we try to figure out where the common ground is, or what are some topics or areas that we can address as farmers and ranchers, this is what rose to the top. No doubt that transparency made the top of that list, followed by more precise use or using less of anything that seems unnatural to them. We talk a lot about continuous improvement at USFRA, and continuous improvement as a farmer and rancher means, what am I doing better today that I didn't do yesterday, that I didn't do last year? Because farmers and ranchers are continuously improving how they are managing their farms. We're always looking for ways to be more precise with the use of our products, always trying to figure out how to recycle, reuse, reduce, all those types of things. Farmers and ranchers are very good at being stewards. And so that's undoubtedly one of the things that rise to the top, is that they love to hear more information about those things. So looking at this, you know, I talk a little bit about we want to address the things that feel unnatural to them. And that's a very hard thing to do, because there's a lot of skepticism behind those tools that we use that seem unnatural. But those are the very things that we have to address at the same time. We're fortunate that anything that, you know, shows more that we're using less or more precise, you know, addresses their direct concerns. And as farmers and ranchers, if there's one thing we're good at doing, it's being more efficient. And so those really help address some of their main concerns. We're going to watch a quick video about transparency, and they're going to show and talk about a few tactics that farmers and ranchers use to increase transparency. And you will see how high these numbers get as far as how well this resonates with consumers. And they're very, very simple tactics. Then we're going to walk through a couple slides that talk about what exactly transparency means according to our research and according to the consumer's eyes. And I think you'll be kind of surprised.
People rightly want to understand where the food they serve their families comes from. But today's increasingly global food system has made this more and more difficult, which is why a group of farmers and ranchers are working to build a more open system for communicating to consumers about how your food gets from farm to fork. This conversation can take many forms, but it starts with developing ways to show you more of what we do, how we do it, and why. Farmers and ranchers are putting more information about food production practices and standards online and available to anyone. They're supporting innovative tracking systems that can show people exactly how their food got from the farm to the store shelf. And some farmers are even installing webcams and other monitoring systems to show consumers the daily workings of their farms. Other innovations are in the works too. But farmers and ranchers want you to know that they hear your concerns and are responding. Farmers and ranchers understand that consumers want the information they need to make informed decisions. That's why they are working to increase transparency across the board and provide honest answers to people's questions about where their food comes from.
So he provided some simple tactics and ways to increase transparency. And you could see how well that ranked or how well that resonated with consumers. I always like to talk about how our initial round of research, which was done in 2011, and then we released our latest round of research in October 2012, how much more, like how higher you will see those numbers get. The messages just continue to resonate as we work with farmers and ranchers to get their stories, and I'm just really impressed to see how well those messages of continuous improvement, if you will, resonate. So people are increasingly wanting to get more information about how food is grown and raised. And they're increasingly getting that information from points of sale, whether that's the grocery store, whether that's at a restaurant. They want to know about how their food is grown and raised. And when farmers and ranchers do not provide that transparency, they become increasingly skeptical that we have something to hide. Interestingly enough, transparency doesn't have to mean, doesn't mean it has to be on a label. Transparency is a huge umbrella in the consumer's eyes. They want to know that there is a place to get information. They want to know that transparency is available to them if they want it, even if they don't visit that website or, they don't talk to that specific farmer. They want to know that that opportunity is there for them to find out more about how their food is grown and raised. My favorite thing about this bubble, the little people talking, if it's not so harmful, why don't you just tell us? I agree. We'll tell you. So I think transparency is a really interesting thing, and certainly as we continue to walk down this journey of creating a movement with consumers and continue to share our story, transparency is definitely a key area to hit on for us. USFRA really wants to work hard to build the trust of American agriculture and work with farmers and ranchers on how to share their stories with consumers and try to figure out how to move that dialogue forward. And we're going to show some examples of moving the dialogue. USFRA is really interesting in the fact that it's the first time that all the commodity groups have come together as one voice and started to move a dialogue and started to have a conversation with all parties welcome to the table. USFRA is really unique in the fact that it doesn't matter whether you're organic or conventional. It doesn't matter what type of crops you grow, what type of livestock you raise. It's one voice coming together to have a conversation about how food is grown and raised. We are setting the agenda. We are the ones creating the agenda about how to have a conversation about agriculture. We are taking agriculture to places it hasn't gone before. I don't think you'd ever thought, a couple years ago that you would have seen agriculture on the Anderson Live Show, but now it has been. Getting in front of consumers is a really great opportunity, and getting in front of those consumers through mainstream media is very, very important. USFRA is working with lots of folks, whether that's in consumer media or pop culture. We definitely want to drive that conversation and take agriculture to places it hasn't gone before. Our ultimate goal is to create conversation, and I actually work on monitoring the Facebook and Twitter pages for USFRA. We have 181,000 followers on Facebook, and I always like to compare our Facebook page to the U.S. population and farmers. 2% of those folks are farmers and ranchers in the U.S., right, of the population. I think about our 181,000 followers, and I think it's very parallel. Probably 2% of them are farmers and ranchers. So there's a lot of consumers there, a lot of consumers wanting to have a dialogue, lots of consumers who want to have a conversation. And Twitter, I think this is always really interesting, that Self Magazine was wanting to have a conversation about eliminating antibiotics in farm animal use. And so we hopped on Twitter, they had a Twitter party, and much to my amazement, I never would have thought this would have happened, but it was an opportunity where we saw Self Magazine take information from USFRA farmers and ranchers about antibiotics, and they actually tweeted that information out. And I think that's absolutely amazing that we would see that kind of opportunity for farmers and ranchers. So a little bit about food dialogues. We kicked off in September 2011 with a series of four food dialogue events in four cities streamed live on fooddialogues.com. It was just a really good way to put USFRA on the map, to continue or to start that conversation, if you will, to dive into the deep issues that consumers have questions about. And, you know, it was just a really great way to start that conversation. But then it gets more intense and more interesting, and we decided to continue those conversations in June 2012, where once again we had a series of panel discussions, all streamed live on fooddialogues.com, consumer media, participants, all kinds of folks there to watch these panel discussions. The panel discussions are starting to dive deeper into those tough issues that consumers have questions about. And, you know, when we decided, you know, we were looking at places to have the food dialogues, and we think about where the conversation is happening about how food is grown and raised, and we see so much of that happening in pop culture, what better place to take the food dialogues than Hollywood, which is exactly where this event happened. It was in Hollywood in June. Once again, touched on those tough issues, kind of intertwined it into panel discussions, had those conversations, you know, felt really successful about that event. And then we decided to go ahead and head to New York for the New York Food Dialogues. And I think the New York Food Dialogues is a really, really exciting and interesting opportunity for farmers and ranchers, USFRA, all of our affiliates and industry partners, because we were at a point where we could really dig deep into tough, tough issues. And it was the first time that we actually had two panel discussions just flat out on antibiotics and biotechnology, digging in really deep with a very diverse number of panelists. It was a really great opportunity to just kind of bring that information to the forefront, kind of walk through some of those challenged questions, and really just bring that information to the forefront. New York was also very interesting because we announced our Faces of Farming and Ranching finalists, which we'll walk through again here in a second. And of course, we have one with us today. We're going to watch a quick video that kind of stems from after our June Food Dialogues event, just to kind of give you guys a taste of what exactly happens at the Food Dialogues. If you are not familiar with the Food Dialogues events, I would urge you to go to fooddialogues.com, and all of those panel discussions are actually still living on the website, and you can view those. But we'll watch a quick video here.
Food. It's a topic we're all passionate about, and more than ever, people are asking, where does it come from?
I think it's exciting that more people want to know about where it came from, how it was grown, who's growing it. That's a very positive thing.
The Food Dialogues is a two-day, four-panel event held in Los Angeles where industry experts, farmers, ranchers, and consumers discuss questions around how food is grown and raised. The focus? Farming and ranching is a dynamic and innovative industry that continues to do things better. We spoke with industry experts and panelists to get their take.
One of the unique things we do is take the technology of ultrasound and scan our animals every week so we know how fast they grow.
And we're trying to implement more solar to offset our electrical usage, which is a high demand in the summertime. You know, as it gets hotter outside in the hot summer months, we're able to offset our high demand electrical usage by creating our own solar power.
It's clear there is an overwhelming excitement about the future of farming and ranching.
Now we are able to figure out down to like a square foot that plant has this type of beetle that's eating the silk, so we need to get rid of that. And we're able to take care of that plant and not the rest of the field. I find that amazing. And so it's those types of
technologies that really show the advancements in agriculture. Look, I can finish that. I've seen that a few times. So obviously that was yours truly, Katie. If you wanted to finish it, I'll turn it back to you. So that's just an example of, you know, the panelists and the types of discussions that we are having at Food Dialogues in June. So once again, I urge you, if you have not viewed those panel discussions and you want to, go to fooddialogues.com. They're in the video gallery. So, you know, even more exciting, we have two Food Dialogue events coming up. One in April at the Bio Convention. I'm obviously going to talk about biotechnology and kind of walk through some of those questions that consumers have. Then we'll be following that up with another Food Dialogues in June in Chicago at Kendall College. So I urge you to, you know, stay abreast of the topics and the panelists and the issues to come as we walk through that dialogue and continue to have the Food Dialogue discussions. So you can find out all the information once again at fooddialogues.com, and I urge you to do that. So I talked a little bit about Faces of Farming and Ranching. We launched the search in June at the June Food Dialogues, June 2012. And, you know, I think that one of the things that, you know, all agriculturalists can agree on is the fact that, you know, everybody else in the world has a spokesperson. They have a face, they have a name, they have somebody to turn to when there's a media interview or when there's questions. And the agricultural industry, we're big, we're diverse, and we did not have that opportunity to, you know, have that one single spokesperson. So we started this search in June looking for the face of farming and ranching. And we had several applicants, I think around 120 applicants from all over the U.S., all different types of operations, all different types of commodities. It was really exciting to see the number and diversity in applicants. Then in November, we went ahead and announced those finalists, and these were the finalists. And actually, we have one of our finalists in the audience today. Brenda's here today. And then we have one of our winners here, Katie. So in January, we actually announced our winners, which is Chris Chin, Will Gilmer, Bo Stone, and Katie Pratt. You will see their face a lot as they continue to represent the agricultural industry and share their stories of farming and ranching. Very exciting opportunity for the agricultural industry. And equally or even more exciting, we are going to be seeing a documentary in the near term about agriculture. USFRA in cooperation with James Moll last week actually announced that there will be a documentary about agriculture coming out. He was very interested in sharing the story of farming and ranching, looking to the next generation of farmers and ranchers in their 20s who are wanting to go back to the farm, wanting to share their stories, wanting to put conventional agriculture in the forefront or in the spotlight, if you will. I think that anybody who has been in the agricultural industry or has paid attention has seen a lot of, you know, news or media around documentaries. Most of them have not been a truthful story about farming and ranching. So it's really exciting that James Moll wants to take this opportunity to, you know, create a documentary with conventional farmers today and share a story of farming and ranching. So a very, very exciting opportunity. You know, I touched a little bit on our research here today, and what I want to let you know about real quick is that we've dove into specific topics. These areas we've tested, we've done the dial testing with that same group that I talked about earlier. And so we have specific information on any of these topics. And if anybody wants to have a conversation about some of that research that has come out of those dial testing videos on these related topics, I'd be more than happy to have a conversation with you about that. But we have certainly done the dial testing on all of those topics, which are, once again, the most challenged topics by today's consumers. So I think, you know, as an agriculturalist, as a farmer, as a rancher, as a mom, as a farm wife, you know, I can say that I feel like agriculture is a very, you know, as a very bright spot. I think that, you know, agriculture makes the world turn around, and there's so many positive things to the agricultural industry. You know, it supports, you know, the economy. There's lots of great opportunities. People are continuously improving each and every day. And, you know, increasing that transparency and taking the opportunity to share a story, you know, as a farmer rancher myself here today has just been a real honor. And I'm really looking forward to farmers and ranchers as they continue to share their story and move that dialogue forward and create a conversation. So with that, I actually think I've wrapped, and I may be wrapped soon. Did I wrap early? I don't know. The more coffee I have, the faster I go. So, but I really appreciate y'all sticking through some of those technical difficulties, and I'm going to turn back over to Chris, and he's going to take any questions that y'all may have. But, you know, I appreciate the opportunity.
Please help thank Erica for her presentation. We have time now to answer any questions that folks in the audience have. I thought I would start out by maybe asking Katie to give a little more of a summary about what your role is going to be as one of these four winners or finalists in the Faces of Farming and Ranching. It's not all tweeting, is it?
I have to send my tweet first.
Okay, all right. You're not chained to a laptop, are you?
No, not at all. In fact, we really hit the ground running back in January when they made the announcement of the finalists out in Phoenix. We were able to attend the dinner for the Food Marketing Institute. So we sat at tables with the presidents and CEOs of grocery manufacturing companies, of food companies, and they told us, you know, don't worry, it's just, you know, tell your story. And right out of the gate, I got hit on ethanol and some other things, and I was like, yeah, it's okay, let's go. So, but it was really great because again, we were having those conversations that Erica talked about. We were hearing the concerns from the grocery stores and the retailers, food retailers, and they were able to sit there with a farmer and get the story from our farms. So that's something we've done. I also did, I don't remember when now, February, I believe, a satellite media tour. So we did 27 TV and radio interviews talking about terms that we apply to our food, like organic and all natural and hormone-free and antibiotic-free and things like that. I did that with the very energetic Chef Danny Boom, who is a great proponent for our cause. He's really into connecting consumers with the farmers. And so it was great to spend time with him and talk to reporters and media from all across the country. And then, of course, outreach through social media also is something we're doing, which is why I'm trial by fire by Twitter right now, because I've been kind of pushing that off a little bit. But Twitter and Facebook and blogging and just, again, telling our story. But the one thing I want to stress is that although there are four people that were named the faces of farming and ranching, it is just not our story to tell. It must be a group effort. And when I say that, it must be a group effort from all walks of agriculture. It cannot be just a corn farmer talking about what I do on my farm. It has to be the vegetable growers. It has to be the orchard owners. It has to be everyone talking about this. So,
great. Any other questions, comments? The question has to do with the information shared between USDA and the USFRA and about information about food production?
The information that USDA has from the farming community and how they either release it or don't release it and under what conditions.
Okay. Well, one of the things, I'll make a couple points about that. One of the main things we've had to say about this coalition is that it is not meant to lobby. So even though we're here on Capitol Hill, we don't take a position on any piece of legislation, and that's done for several reasons, the primary one of which is that there are checkoff dollars that help pay for this, and so USDA restricts how that can be used. So there is something of a firewall that way. One of the things that I participated in, along with Bob Stallman, who's chairman of USFRA, in addition to being chairman of the American Farm Bureau, is that we did have a briefing with some of the senior USDA people, from the Deputy Secretary's office as well as from the Agriculture Marketing Service, and that was maybe just 3 weeks ago. And we talked through some of the same information that Erica presented earlier this morning. So we want to have a dialogue with the folks at USDA as well, but there's, you know, they have their role and we have ours, and some of that overlaps, but for the most part we're pursuing separate paths. We have a microphone in back if anyone back there or off to the side wants to ask anything. Ray.
Can I ask any of the panelists, as you have these dialogues, this conversation, I'm with the United Fresh Produce Association. Are there any of the issues that rise to the top as being perhaps the most difficult to have a conversation about? You can't really seem to get traction with conveying our messages.
Do you want to take a stab at that, Katie?
Yeah, biotechnology has got to be the hardest one. And I was just actually out in Hawaii just this last week. And let me tell you, that's a different environment to talk about biotechnology in. That's different. There's not a lot of conversating going on there. But, you know, it's something, though, that I really feel strongly that we have to gain traction in that area. We have to, because it's such an integral part. It's such a integral tool in our farming tool belt. One of the farmers that joined us in Hawaii, Alan Schreiber from Washington, he's a produce grower out there, and he told his story about turning to use BT sweet corn on his organic farm and how it was a blessing because now they weren't spraying 6 to 7 times to try to get rid of earworms. And
I thought it was a great story. And so I think that that story of biotechnology has to come from all of us. Too often, again, it comes from the corn farmer, and I feel like sometimes that falls on deaf ears. It has to come from the produce growers as well, who might be using that or looking for new avenues, new tools to use in their tool belt.
Ray, I'm sure if you have any members who need help in Hawaii, Katie will volunteer to go back out, or maybe we will too. Other questions or comments? Okay.
I understand the need for standardization in testing, scientific testing, like the dial test. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering if in the dial test you used men and women giving the message and different age categories giving the message to see how that influenced the trust and how well the message was received.
I believe it was.
As far as the gentleman that was in the video. No, he's the person that we look to do that. It's for a very specific reason. We wanted somebody who is, you know, just kind of, for lack of better words, average looking. We wanted somebody to really pay attention to what was being said rather than what he looked like or what he was wearing, which is why you see him kind of in, you know, a khaki shirt and he's just, you know, just a guy just talking. So we really tried to focus hard on making sure that they were listening to what he was saying above anything else. To my knowledge, I don't believe we've tried it with a female, and I don't know if there's a reason for that or not, but to date, it's only been that one gentleman.
Okay. Way in the back.
I have a question about the audience. Whole Foods is in the news a lot lately because, again, on the biotech issue. And USFRA seems to be doing a great job of having conversations, obviously, like we showed. But do you guys foresee it being becoming more of an aggressive movement? Because there's a very loud minority that seems to be discounting what USFRA tries to say in its messaging. Do you see USFRA moving forward with more aggression and, you know, going to talk, you know, having a food dialogue with Whole Foods or some of the bloggers you might read in the New York Times who call for a complete overhaul of American mm-hmm. agriculture? I'm wondering how you see it going forward, building on the success you've had so far.
Let me take a stab at answering that. It's a good question because, as Erica was saying, we are going to be having a kind of a mini food dialogue session at the Biotech Industry Organization meeting next month in Chicago, and we're still putting together the panel, and one of the names that came up about whom to invite was John Mackey, who I believe he's still CEO. Certainly he's the founder of Whole Foods. The whole idea being that you want to have disparate voices and often dissenting voices as part of the dialogue because that's what conversation is all about. The subsequent meeting that we're going to be having, the food dialogue meeting in Chicago, is going to be with those who are in the food value chain, the marketing chain, and so we could certainly see someone from a company like Whole Foods participating in that as well. And, of course, this isn't just about the folks at USFRA talking to Whole Foods or, you know, on the one hand, on the other hand, but we certainly want to involve people in that discussion because I think that's the only way that you can really find areas of common concern is by having everyone at the table. Anybody else? It's starting to warm up over here, I can tell from these folks. Kelly?
Mm-hmm. Food service, those folks who are making decisions yeah. about sourcing that are sometimes contrary to production practices. What kind of conversations have you had, and what's the reception been?
Well, I'd like Katie to follow up on that because she did touch on that this meeting at the Food Marketing Institute, which is, I think, a lot of you know, that's the trade association for the major food companies, all the major supermarkets, including Walmart. And then we are also going to be inviting those sorts of people, the processors and the retailers, to this meeting that we're doing in Chicago. So that is a work in progress, but it was specifically because of your question, the fact that a lot of the choices that consumers are presented with in restaurants and in supermarkets, those decisions are made not necessarily by farmers, are not even always by what consumers dictate, but by those who choose to stock certain products or not stock certain products in the case of Whole Foods. So maybe you can just, as an anecdote, talk about who all was in the room when you were at the FMI meeting in Arizona back in January.
Jeez, Chris, that was back in January. And there was a lot of people in the room. You know, what I could say is this. I had an opportunity back in Illinois to lead a food scavenger hunt, for lack of a better term, through a grocery store with a mom's group and some of their their homeschooling students. And afterwards, I talked with the manager. It was a Jewel Osco. And what we discussed is where our food comes from. And he, too, makes the observation that people don't understand when there's not oranges on the shelf, they don't get why they aren't there. Or when the price of meat goes up, they don't understand why it is. And I discovered in that short little conversation I had with this manager of a Jewel Osco that they kind of get what we're talking about, too. It's just from a different perspective. So, like I said, for me personally, my conversation happened at that Food Marketing Institute with a couple different people. But on the whole, I think that's what we're striving to do with USFRA, is to take the conversation away from the choir and to the places we've never been before. And so I think with that group effort, we're really being able to reach those people that we haven't talked to before.
Forrest, did you have the microphone?
Yeah. Chris, one quick follow-up to the gentleman's question about the dial testing methodology and how we went about that part of the research. I think Erica did a really nice job of describing the gentleman that you saw in the video clips, but I think this gentleman's question maybe even drove more specifically to who were the audience that we were working with, testing messages and trying to develop the outcomes that you saw from the research. And one of the big takeaways that we really tried to focus on is within the area of developing this research was to sort through the potential candidates that were in front of reviewing information like this. So we sorted for, not against, but for the opinion elites. And so that is not to communicate that we were looking for the elitist as it relates to any kind of a food movement. What we were looking for was the opinion elites, which are the most influential folks within this country that are driving the conversation about food today, and especially through the use of social media tools. So that is maybe the second part to that question that I think is really important to understand in looking at the integrity behind how all of this research was conducted.
And for those of you who don't know, that was Forrest Roberts, who's the CEO of the Cattlemen's Association. He's also on the board of USFRA. Any other questions or comments? Yes. How are you, Mary Emma?
Yeah, I'm from Crop Lake America. I was very struck how you talked about messaging and how we communicate about agriculture and that being safe, affordable, abundant isn't necessarily sticking anymore. And we've been communicating that to smaller groups on the county or state level. And sometimes I've gotten some blank stares in response. I think we've gotten very comfortable with that terminology. Mm-hmm.
I'll take a first stab at this, and then maybe you can help out, Erica. I think it's a challenge to assumptions. So the first thing is that if that's the mantra we've been using for probably a couple decades, and we're showing that that's not necessarily moving the needle anymore, because the safe, abundant, affordable, that's the table stakes that people assume, at least in this country. And really, we're talking about, at this point, communicating mostly with domestic audiences. So if we have to pivot and change the way we communicate, I think that is a challenge to certain assumptions. And the alternative or the next step is not as intuitively easy to communicate to people. And so that's why we've come up with this process called EASE. And maybe you can remind people what
right.
that's about.
So as I mentioned, that's one of the things I do is I travel the country and I talk with farmers and ranchers about having those conversations with consumers. Through our EASE training, which is engage, acknowledge, share a story, and, you know, hopefully you earn trust, just to go over those real quick. And, you know, I think what we really talk a lot about with USFRA is talking about continuous improvement. And You know, that if you keep that in your mind, then I think you kind of trump the affordable, abundant, safe message. You know, I think that farmers and ranchers are maybe not always great at recognizing how much they have improved, because they've never just sat down and said, golly, I really have just done a lot of things and didn't recognize it. And so I think actually when I go through the EASE trainings with farmers and ranchers, I really feel like they get excited because they didn't, you know, before they had taken the opportunity to recognize all the great things that they had done, and then they're really excited to share their story. So, you know, I don't really feel like we get blank stares or they question moving away from that safe, affordable, abundant message, because they now recognize that there's a better way to tell their story, and they're really excited about the things that they have done and incorporated on their farms or ranches so that they can share a good story with consumers that, you know, really addresses their concerns.
Katie?
Can I add to that? As a farmer who went through the EASE training, I feel like we've finally been given permission to talk about what we do on our farm. So often, I feel like, you know, when we had those conversations, you didn't want to say biotechnology, and you didn't want to say pesticides, because that was evil things, you know, that got people's blood boiling. And I feel like now we have permission to say, yes, I use biotechnologies on my farm. Yes, we use pesticides as one of our pest management tools, and this is why we do it. And, you know, it's kind of like a this is who I am, so take it or leave it type attitude. And I don't know if that's exactly what we're going for, but we have permission to talk about it now and to take it to a national stage. So that's what I think EASE has done for me as a farmer.
And just a final thought on that. I liken it to the old adage, think globally but act locally. We were communicating globally with that safe, abundant, affordable message, but now what we're really encouraging people is to act and communicate locally, meaning at the personal level, at the 10-foot level, with benefits and explanations, as opposed to thinking more at the 30,000-foot global level. Yep, question over here. I think it is two different approaches. I don't know. Erica, do you want to take a first stab at that?
Not really.
Okay.
This is what I can tell you about the biotechnology research. It's very hard to find any kind of silver bullet when it comes to biotechnology. The few things that we have found that resonate, because there are very few, I suppose in a consumer's eyes, consumer benefits to them, right? You know, most of them are protecting the crop so that we can provide a viable, you know, product to a consumer. And, you know, in their eyes, it's not really looked at like that. But, you know, there are definitely things coming down the pipe from several seed companies and that have consumer benefits. And if we focus on those types of benefits, we find that resonates the best. As far as differentiating those types of messages or that types of conversations, I don't know as to whether I can answer that for you.
Partial answer at that, Patrick. I think that one of the challenges is that for some people who are perhaps more educated or aware, that they're aware of the extent of use, or at least they have some conceptions about the extent of use of biotechnology and genetically modified organisms in the food system. And a lot of other people, maybe the more general consumer, they're not. And so part of it is even just finding out what people know and what they assume going into the conversation. And that's where a lot of this has to get down to a case-by-case conversational basis. Why don't we have one more question here? Yes.
I'm just curious, we work with college men and women who are very passionate about agriculture and telling our story. One of the things that we hear often is they don't feel, they want to share that story and follow, I think, that ease approach, but they feel like they need the facts in their back pocket after that, and they aren't necessarily comfortable that they have those or where to go find them. And so I'm curious, one, if in that movable middle or the biggest population that we need to try to talk to, if creating trust is the end game, or if there you then need to bring, once you have an established trust, more facts into that conversation, and where do we go find those or compel our community to share those so that we feel comfortable enough to start the conversation in the first place?
Certainly, that's a great question. You know, as we walk, you know, through that ease training, I really feel once you've gotten to a point to earn trust, that is an opportunity where hopefully you get to dig deeper into a conversation and maybe even use some of that data and information. But you have to get to a point where they trust you as a, you know, as a producer of food before you can get to that point. And then to even answer your question further, fooddialogues.com/foodsource is a great resource to find information on the most challenged topics that consumers have today. We took a look at, you know, what people were asking about. You know, like I said, we have 181,000 followers on Facebook, and we looked at the topics that they're continuously asking questions about or have a lot of misinformation about. And then we took those topics and created FoodSource. And so at FoodSource, you'll find an overview of each of those issues, biotechnology, antibiotics, hormones, you know, family farms, all those topics. You'll find 9 different topic areas with overviews and then outlined by the toughest questions with data and facts and figures and where to get that, you know, additional information. So that's a good place to look and a good place to start. And we certainly wanted to provide consumers with an opportunity to find all of their most asked, challenged issues in one place. We felt like consumers were taking a lot of time to try to track down their answers. And so we tried to provide a place for them to get all their answers at kind of a one-stop shop, if you will. So, you know, as you talk with your students, I urge you to send them fooddialogues.com/foodsource.
Okay. Yep, go ahead.
And then the other thing, too, is that you just have to tell from your experience. Because when we start talking percentages and numbers, then people just check out. And so once you talk about your personal farm story and you make that one-on-one connection, then they will feel comfortable coming back to you to get the numbers. Right. And that's when using FoodSource comes into play. But it's first just making that one-on-one connection.
Yeah, once you've definitely gotten to that point where you've earned some trust, that's when you dig deeper, when you have the opportunity to dig deeper.
Okay.
I think we had a question over here. Right. Well, no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
How do you send those messages out as far as, like,
well, one of the things, the question was about animal welfare in particular and certain practices involved in beef in your case, but the FoodSource really has information about a variety of the hot button issues involved in either the crop things that Katie deals with or some of the livestock things that Erica and her husband deal with, and also dairy and poultry and swine in addition. And so this year in particular, we've made a special emphasis to have greater discussion around GMOs, which is primarily a row crop and oil seed issue, not exclusively, but primarily. And then also antibiotics, which is really an issue for people like yourself and others involved in livestock production, because we found that those two categories, the GMOs as well as the antimicrobial use on livestock operations, those are the two things that come up the most when consumers and others express concern about what's happening with food production. So that's why we're doing some special things. We've got an antibiotics working group on which I serve, and we're also doing something similar with GMOs as well.
And if you look at our, you know, we've dial tested animal welfare, and to be quite honest, the only thing that consumers really want to know from a farmer or rancher is that you are taking care of your animals, they are not being abused, and if you have an employee or somebody on your farm who is doing that, that you have rectified that situation. You know, in my eyes, that's plain and simple. I don't have a problem talking about that any day because we take really good care of our animals. Sometimes I think better than our kids. My calves get fed on time every day. My children, eh.
Well, we're going to wrap things up here. Katie and Erica and others will be around here for a little bit longer, but please join me in thanking these two ladies. And thank you all for coming here this morning. Have some food on the way out and enjoy Agriculture Day.